We get into the battle scene now. Moses goes to battle, essentially. And this battle's not Moses versus Pharaoh. It's really God versus the other gods of Egypt. So what we're going to see here is a setup of Moses getting ready to fight a battle, or Moses getting ready to be involved in spiritual warfare. So for the next four chapters of the book of Exodus, we're going to see a lot of spiritual warfare. And I wanted to prep you some, first by apologizing a little bit to you. You see, I'm your youth pastor, and as your youth pastor, I feel like I should be authentic, open, and truthful. So I'm gonna be honest with you here. And that is, in the last month, I've let some things cloud my vision. I've let some things get in the way of the mission. And there's something very, very interesting about the mission. And do you guys understand what I mean by the mission? You see, because as believers, we're not just put on this earth to just sit around and enjoy life. Instead, we're put on this earth with a task, with a mission to make God famous and to spread His word. You know, that's kind of our commission. Go, tell, teach, make disciples. This is our commission. And it's a war. So I was listening to a message by Matt Chandler where he brought up and explained something that I just wanted to share with you. He talked about the 101st Airborne in World War II, beaches of Normandy. You guys with me? I mean, wouldn't you say this is like the turning point in the war? We show up at the beaches of Normandy. America shows up and drops the 101st Airborne. There's a whole movie series called Band of Brothers about this group. And they get dropped onto Normandy. And what's amazing about it is they're dropped all over and they're scattered. And they all share an objective. But they're scattered everywhere. I mean, some of these guys get dropped in places where they don't see their crew, they don't see their team for weeks. They don't see their people for weeks at a time. So these guys get dropped everywhere, and they start to they all pursue the same objective of attacking and conquering that area, right? So they all have this unified objective. Now, what's interesting is none of them exercise the same plan. Because plans change really quickly when someone shoots at you, right? I mean, if your plan is to go right and there's a guy up on the hill shooting right, you go left, right? If your plan is to go back and there's people behind you pressing forward, you run, right? I mean, this is, plans change. Strategies change. But the objective is always the same. The mission never changes. And I feel like sometimes, as students especially, you are prone to lose sight of the mission. And you're prone to let things get in the way that are petty and small. And things that no doubt to you seem like huge deals. And they seem like big, massive deals. Someone said something behind your back. Someone did something that was inappropriate. Someone treated you with disrespect. Someone did something to you, and all of a sudden that your world shrinks from the mission of Christ to this little tiny speck of insignificance. And I just wanted to encourage you, we have an objective to go to. We have a mission to pursue. And so if right now, if you're in this room thinking about someone else in this room, you are the person I'm talking to. If you are in this room looking around thinking, oh, this person over here needs to hear that, you're the person I'm dealing with. Because you're the one that's distracted by the other person. You see what I'm getting at? I love you, but we can't get distracted from the mission. We can't get distracted from the objective. We have to charge the gates or we die. So the pettiness, the smallness, all these things that plague your youth pastor need to stop. And I don't need to outline them, do I? I mean, you guys are smart. You know better. We are dropped on a beach and we have an objective to take the ground. And when we let these little things get in the way, we lose our objective. And all of a sudden, the war becomes about the speck and not about the objective. So, before we dive into discovering the war of fighting for Christ, before we dive in of discovering the war of what it is to war against the devil, against principalities of darkness and evil, before we dive into that, I want to remind you that you have an objective. And you have an enemy that you fight. And that enemy showers you with lies. And he showers you with hate. He showers you with anger. And the way to fight back is to charge the gates and ignore the lies. So, before we dived in, I just wanted to share that with you because I've been distracted. I've been distracted. And I've let things get in the way. And I'm sorry. No more. We have an objective and we need to charge. We need to attack. We dive into the text tonight, Exodus chapter 7. And it's a lot. We're going to do the whole chapter. That's why I say we got a lot of work to do. I hope we're going to do the whole chapter. Let's go. Okay, Exodus chapter 7, verse 1. And the Lord said to Moses, "See, I've made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet." Okay, now something we need to get off the bat right now is that in this illustration, God is Moses and you are Aaron. Okay, throughout the battle scene, God is Moses and you are Aaron. You with me? Everybody got it? Okay, who is God? Who are you? Right, so during the battle scene, as much as we will take things from the way Moses responds, because he's a human, as much as we will examine how Moses reacts, because he's a human and he's the main character, we're gonna look at Aaron for our example. And the reason is because God says here, "See, to Pharaoh," or during the battle, "I've made you like God and your brother Aaron like your prophet." And in modern day, we serve a master, God, as his voice in the darkness. So we stand to preach, teach the Word of God, and teach the truth of God to and against the darkness. And so that means that we are Aaron the prophet. You with me? Everybody got that? Okay. So, he says, "You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of his land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring my hosts, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. And the Egyptians shall know that I am Yahweh when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring my people Israel from among them." Moses and Aaron did so. They did just as the Lord commanded them. Now, Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. Check it out. 80 years old. Everybody know Albert Rickaway? Right? No? Nobody knows Albert Rickaway. All right. Mr. Rickaway, right? You can't really understand him because he doesn't talk very loud, right? Brother Seeley. Anybody remember Brother Seeley? Let's see, George Cleveland. Who are some other elderly member? Roy Carl? Yeah. See, you're getting the picture, right? These are the guys who are going before Pharaoh. It's not John. It's not young spry men who are going to be able to kick everybody's tail. It's, you know, Albert Rickaway, right? And I imagine that Pharaoh thought of, I love Albert to death. He's an incredible man, but I imagine Pharaoh thought of Moses kind of like Albert, because Albert, you can't hear him. He just turns to Aaron and is like, "Mother, blah, 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 blah." And then Aaron turns and, "Not that," you know, and yells at him. And so, you get the picture, two older guys going to address Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Now, check out what God has said to Moses, because this is critical. Look at what God says. He says, "I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart." He takes credit for it right there. I'm not making that up. He says, in verse 3, "I will harden Pharaoh's heart." And then he says, "I'm going to do a lot of signs. I'm going to do a lot of wonders. He's not going to listen." And he's going to say, and he says, I'm going to have to force them to listen. Now there's this interesting thing going on there that we're going to really get into in chapter 9 and 10. But here you've got God saying to Pharaoh, God saying to Moses, look, you're going to go into Egypt. I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. And Pharaoh's going to make it really difficult for you. And this is what's going to happen. Pharaoh's going to make it really hard on you, and so I'm going to make it hard on Pharaoh. And we're going to fight. And so God basically tells Moses, we're going to fight with Pharaoh. And then he says, I'm going to win. And he says, and when I win, people are going to know my name. That's really cool. I mean, because God's like, I mean, basically what God just said is Pharaoh's going to punch me, I'm going to hit him harder, and then ask him who his daddy is. That's what he just said. That's what he said. So he goes on in verse 8, and it says, then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, prove yourselves by a miracle, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. And Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a snake. Now, I just want you to know, I was paranoid that this was going to turn into a snake tonight, but I praise the Lord that He has mercy on me. So, he cast down his staff, and it becomes a serpent. In verse 11, Pharaoh summons the wise men and the sorcerers. Now, check this out. This is Pharaoh's response. Look at Pharaoh's response. This is exciting. God comes before Pharaoh, right? And Moses comes up, and he's standing in front of Pharaoh, and he looks at Aaron, and he says, and Aaron goes, booyah, right? And it becomes a snake, right? And my guess is Moses and Aaron still a little afraid of the snake, you know? Because, I mean, I really think that Moses was like, you know, about the snake, just because I kind of relate to him. So he throws it down, it becomes a snake, and then Pharaoh's response is really interesting. This is what Pharaoh does. Pharaoh does this really interesting thing. He says, verse 11, then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. Now check this out. This is sweet. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Still, Pharaoh's heart would harden, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord said. So this is what happens. Aaron walks in, throws the things down, it becomes a snake. They walk in, they take sticks, they throw them down, they become snakes. And then this stick eats their stick. And then Aaron walks over, picks up, and this is what I think happens. The snake is like, to Pharaoh, right? And Aaron's like, bam, staff, right? And he's like, what? And so Pharaoh doesn't believe, because he sees that his magicians can do some by the same dark arts. And what I wanted to draw out for you tonight, by the way, keep in the back of your mind the staff. They always have the staff. Keep that in the back of your mind. We're going to come back to that. But right now, what I wanted to draw out for you is that Moses and Aaron have power over sin. Because the snake, remember what we talked about back when God gave him the sign? The snake represents the sin, right? Everywhere in the Bible, whenever it talks about the serpent, it's always sin. And sin ruins humanity and killed off humanity. I mean, that's what it's talking about. So he throws down the thing, and he can pick it up. Because as a changed believer in Yahweh, who has felt the presence of the Lord, has been cleansed from his spiritual leprosy, and has been redeemed by Christ, he is able to pick up the staff. He's able to have victory over sin. He's not bound to the evils of this world because he has victory over sin. Now, I want to warn you. A lot of the stuff in this world look like victory. A lot of our enemy's ploy is to throw things at us that look a lot like victory. A lot of us know students who are in Wicca, right? And how many of you have a friend who's in Wicca? Go ahead and raise your hand. Okay, one. I guarantee you know more. Wicca, by the way, is witchcraft, right? Spells. A lot of students get into that here. And it's dark. But for some reason, they think that they can claim victory over the darkness by it. A lot of students get into self-actualization. In fact, they don't even seem to care about God or life beyond this or anything. They don't They don't care about that. As a matter of fact, they're just concerned about how well their life runs, and they think that if they're a good person, then they'll do fine. A lot of them think they can claim victory over sin that way. And the thing is, and this is what's really, really kind of annoying, is that frequently it looks like they can. Frequently, it looks like they have less problems than we do, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Frequently, the way the world does things seems like it works better than the way we do things. I mean, they throw the snake on the ground and they think that it has power because they're able to turn sin into sin. Like, that's the image here, right? That's the when Moses and Aaron come with the staff of God, they turn the staff into sin and then they turn it back into a staff. Now the Egyptians come and they throw down their staff and it doesn't become a stick again. Because there's no real power, no real abiding power in it, no power that's life-changing or altering of sin and the state of humanity. There's nothing there. But it looks like it, doesn't it? And it looks like your friends have more fun when they're not a Christian, right? It looks like the stuff they do is a lot more fulfilling. But it's not. It's a lie. So I wanted to warn you, one of Satan's ploys is to look like us. To look really good. To look really strong. Look really healthy. That's one of his biggest ploys. And the thing is, it's gonna look real to you for a while. There's gonna be times when you're gonna look up and you're gonna be like, okay, I would rather do that. I would rather be that way. I would rather have that freedom. Like, there's going to be times when you look around and you go, I would rather have that freedom. But what you need to remember is that the snake, their snakes can't handle ours. God supersedes every enemy. And a relationship with Christ is the only thing that brings freedom from sin. And knowing the God Almighty, Yahweh, that's the only thing that brings it. So, next we have the next plague. And remember, Moses comes to Pharaoh, and he is God to him. Now, Pharaoh's heart, even after his snake has eaten the other two, right? Even after, like, I don't know, if I threw a stick down and it became a snake, and then two, you know, magicians came in the room and threw down a stick and it became a snake, and my snake ate their snakes, I think I'd be like, yeah, my snake's bad, your snakes are sissies. Right? I mean, that's what God is doing. He's like, look, even if you can do some good stuff, even if your life looks okay, even if things look okay without me, it's still nothing compared. It is nothing compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Jesus Christ. So we make our boast in Christ alone, right? So we move on, and it says, still Pharaoh's heart was hardened. This is just another warning for you. Sometimes, no matter how hard you try, and this is one of the greatest burdens on my life, no matter how hard you try to talk to people about Christ and share Christ's love, some people are not going to hear. They're just not. Okay, so Moses and Aaron go on. So the first thing happens. They throw it down, and this is kind of how this goes. They throw the staff down, bam, and then it becomes a snake, eats the other two snakes. They pick it up, they walk off, right? They leave. And then the next day it says, the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He refuses to let the people go. And Moses is like, well, no kidding, I've just been with him. And so he goes on and he says, go to Pharaoh in the morning as he's going out to the water. Stand on the bank of the Nile to meet him. Take in your hand the staff that turned into a serpent. And you shall say to him, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to you, saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But so far you have not obeyed. Thus says Yahweh, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn into blood. The fish in the Nile shall die, and the Nile will stink, and the Egyptians will grow weary of drinking from the Nile. And the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, take your staff, stretch your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their rivers, their canals, their ponds, and all their pools of water, so that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout the land of Egypt, even in the vessels of wood and in the vessels of stone. Check this out. This is how awesome our God is, right? Pharaoh is going down to the water. Now first let's deal with Pharaoh. Pharaoh's going down to the water. He's going to wash himself. He's going to cleanse himself. But here's the big deal about the River Nile, right? When they went down to the River Nile, they were washing themselves in the blood of their god Osiris. They believed that this blood had supernatural powers, right? So the Egyptians were like, every day you go wash in the Nile in the blood of the goddess Osiris, and then we irrigate the Nile to our crops, because in that water, in his lifeblood, is our life. Now, the water of the Nile was the god Osiris's blood, who's the god of the underworld of Egypt, right? And so get this, the god of the underworld, right? Darkness is their god of life. And then from there, not only that, but the god Nu, in you, like not N-E-W, but in you, he was the god of the protection of the Nile. So he was supposed to protect all the life in the Nile. So like the reason the Nile was safe was because Osiris's lifeblood was in the Nile, so that gave life to everything else, and then Nu protected that lifeblood. So Pharaoh goes down to the River Nile to find his life in the life of the Nile. He goes down to the river of the Nile to find salvation in the Nile. To find salvation in his God. So he's filling himself with this other God. Now in our culture there's a couple of corollaries, right? I mean, our people in America, we fill ourselves with anything but God, right? TV, fame, music, What? The internet. Anybody else want to throw one out? And we fill ourselves with anything but God. And not only do we fill ourselves with it, but I would argue that you worship it. That students especially worship what they fill themselves with. If you don't believe me, go to school tomorrow, ask any student what they've been listening to in music. Because music is one of the prime acts of worship, right? Guarantee you most of them not going to be anything that glorifies God. A lot of them are going to be ones that glorify sin. Right? And I'm not talking about whether or not it's Christian or not. I mean, let's get that out of the way. You know, the label Christian, that's kind of a popular thing in today's culture, but like 30 years ago, there was no such thing as Christian and non-Christian music. It was all just music. And there were some that had Christian undertones and some that didn't, right? And then, let's go back 200 years ago, there was nothing but Christian music, because Christians made the music, right? And classical music, it's almost all just Christians. It's almost all used to rejoice. Almost all of it was performed in churches. Isn't that kind of neat, huh? I mean, like, could you imagine, like, up here, this becoming classical music someday? Probably won't. I mean, it won't happen, but because it'll always be called contemporary. Which I think is funny, because it's not going to be contemporary in 5 years, right? But ask your friends what they worship, what their music is. Ask them what they're putting into themselves. And you'll see that they're not worshiping at the river of life, Jesus Christ. They're worshiping at the River Nile. They're worshiping the God of the underworld. Are you catching what I'm saying? I mean, if they're not worshiping Christ and they're filling themselves with stuff that does not glorify God, they are naturally filling themselves with stuff that glorifies sin instead. And if they're filling themselves with stuff that glorifies sin, then what they're doing is exactly what Pharaoh's doing, going down to the river to cleanse himself. And your friends are going to die in that river. Pharaoh goes down to the river to cleanse himself. And Moses goes down to meet him. And this is just imagine the scene, right? Moses and Aaron, Albert Rickway and Roy Carl. I may have them come some week and just stand up here. It'd be great, right? Moses and Aaron, we're going to say Albert's Moses because he's not very loud. And Roy is Aaron because he can be very loud. And so we're gonna have them up there, and they're standing up there, and they come to the river, and these older men look at Pharaoh, who's probably, I would say Pharaoh is probably about 30, 40. And that's just a guess, but that's what I'd say. And they're standing there, and they're watching Pharaoh come down, and he's going to bathe in the river, and Moses is like, tell him, hey. Hey! Tell him that God's going to ruin the Nile. God's going to ruin your Nile? Do it. I'm going to do it! Oh, I was supposed to, okay. And he stretched his hand out, right? And hits the Nile, and check it out, everything, look at the text, everything becomes blood. Everything. All of it becomes blood. And what I think is so interesting about this is God is just exposing it for what it is. He's not changing anything. This is exactly what they believe. That the Nile is the lifeblood of Osiris. So he's like, alright, you want to eat his blood? There. And all the fish die. Now imagine this, right? You got water everywhere, and you got ponds, puddles in your yard, right? And they're like you're out here at 20 miles away from the Nile. Well, actually, it'd be a lot less, like 4 miles away from the Nile, because you didn't have a car, so 4 miles is a long way. So you got this puddle right here, right? And you hear this from off in the distance, right? And you're like, what in the world? And your puddle is blood. And you're like, honey, come here. And she's holding a pitcher of water. And when she walks towards you, you recognize that the pitcher is no longer water, it's blood. And she's like, and breaks, slow motion. And so she drops the pitcher, and then she runs inside to check the little jars that they had to hold water in. Blood. Everywhere. So here it is. Moses, verse 20. Moses and Aaron did as the Lord commanded in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants. He lifted up his staff and struck the water of the Nile. And all the water in the Nile turned into blood. And the fish of the Nile died, and the Nile sank so that the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile. There was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. The magicians of Egypt take credit for this. They take credit for it. They come and they say to Pharaoh, but the magicians of Egypt did the same by their secret arts. So Pharaoh's heart remained hardened, and he would not listen to them, as Yahweh had said. So Aaron and Moses come before God, and they come before Pharaoh, and they obliterate the God of Egypt. Like, they throw the first punch and wipe out the God of Egypt. And they show Pharaoh exactly what benefit going to the world for his fulfillment, his satisfaction, his life is going to be. He shows the Egyptians exactly what it is to make the world your God. And to make the God of this world your God. And to worship the things that are here. And to worship our own sinful cravings and desires. He shows Pharaoh exactly what that's like. He reveals it for what it is. You see, God's not pulling a sucker punch on Pharaoh. He's just showing him what he's doing. He looks at the rivers and he looks at all the things, and he says, Osiris's blood is actually blood. And it's going to kill us. And he kills all the fish. Now, how annoying would that be? I mean, just think from the perspective of an Egyptian. This guy wants a bunch of slaves to go free, and Pharaoh won't let him. So he's like, all right, the guy strikes the Nile, and it all becomes blood. All of a sudden, it's not just an in-house thing anymore, is it? It's not just Pharaoh battling with God now, right? It's God exposing to Egypt all of their sin. And in the same way, brothers and sisters, when we battle with the enemy and we fight and we stretch our arms out to show that the things of this world bring death, which, by the way, is, if you haven't caught on to that, that's what I'm telling you we have to do. And when we stretch out our staff, which I'll get to in a couple minutes as to what the staff really is for you, when we stretch out our staff, over the rivers of this world and prove that they're just blood and that they're going to kill the people in this world. We need to be certain that it shows everyone. Because it's not just an in-house fight. You're not the only one fighting on God's side. And they're not the only ones fighting on the devil's. They're not the only ones who fight for the spirits of this world. So we need to expose it for what it is. You know, I'll tell you the most profound question that I've ever asked a young man here in this place was I was sitting with a young man and he was talking to me about how he feels fine with the things of the world. He feels fulfilled. He feels like everything's going great. And I looked at him and I said, do you struggle with depression? And he was like, how'd you know about that? And I said, well, with all the garbage you put into yourself, it's not hard to see. And he said, well, yeah, but that doesn't prove anything. And I said, well, how well do you sleep at night? And he said, I have to take pills to sleep. And I was like, gee, medicating away the pain, that's really good, isn't it? And I sat with him and talked with him. And what came out of it was we established that what he was filling himself with was death and despair. And it was slowly corroding away at his soul. That boy has yet to come to a youth group. And he goes to your school. And I spoke to him at your school. The reason he has yet to come is because you've lost your vision of the mission. I love you. Don't hear me coming down on you. But when you let petty stuff get in the way of the war, and you fail to expose the Nile for all that it is, for the rivers of this world for all that they are, you let people die. Because all they can see is that you're feeding on the Nile too. So Moses and Aaron show power over the Nile. And they expose the falseness of this world. And what is so frustrating, what's so irritating about, I didn't mean for that to be so loud, by the way. What's so irritating about this world is that when we do good, or when we show that something is good, and when we show something beautiful, the world copies it. Like music. I already established with you that 200 years ago, all music was played in churches. Pretty much. I mean, you had some that wasn't, but it's not famous now. Handel's Messiah. I mean, Mozart's works. Beethoven, all played in churches. Greatest music in the world started in churches. Did you know that Ambrose started a church, right? He's the mentor of Augustine, and he starts a church. And what he did was he incorporated singing into the church. For the first time ever, a church service had a hymn. And there was a riot. Because the people in the city didn't want to hear that music. And Ambrose was almost killed because he wanted to sing a song to God. Music started as worship. And I would tell you that it still is worship. What kind of stuff do you listen to? What kind of stuff are you filling yourself with? I don't want to stop just at music. I mean, let's talk about some other things. Movies. Right? What kind of movies are you filling yourself with? Books. Honestly, the most popular books out there today are all evil. Seriously. They all worship darkness. Those are the most popular ones out there. And I'm not being crass or mean or attacking a certain cultural icon. They all worship darkness. They glorify demonic activity. They glorify what God has Himself in Deuteronomy said is detestable. They glorify magic. Every one of them. All the popular books, they do. And if that boils you a little bit, if that makes you angry a little bit, well, I'm sorry, it's just the truth. And so what items from the Nile are you taking to fill yourselves with? When's it going to come serious to you? I mean, when's it going to become a big deal that you're in a war? When's it going to matter? We fight against darkness, against principalities of evil. We don't war against flesh and blood. You can't just punch darkness. You have to expose it for what it is. So Moses waves the staff, or Aaron rather, waves the staff. Everything turns into blood, shows exactly what it is. And then the world imitates Moses. Now what I think is really funny is Aaron and Moses have already done this. Like, it's hysterical. They come out and they're like, everything's blood. And then before Pharaoh could see it, right? The Egyptian magicians are like, quick, get a bowl. And then they run and they get a bowl. Look, we can do it too. And they scoop up blood. Look, here it is. Because everything's already blood. What are they going to do? I mean, seriously. They can't turn water into blood. It's already there. So they're obviously lying about it. They're obviously faking it. And here's the thing. In the world, you can put a pretty good fake on things. They can look pretty fulfilling. They can look like they're pretty satisfying. They can look like things that are really going to make a difference in people's lives. But they're not. They're death and despair and destruction. And their end is turmoil. So Moses waves his staff, and I just want to ask you, when are you going to start waving yours? When are you going to start fighting back? Don't tell me that you're waiting for your youth minister to do it. Because I'm already fighting and I'm getting tired. So when are we going to strike? I mean, you tell me, if you don't want to, if you just want to be comfortable here, enjoying Wednesday night, enjoying Sunday morning, feeling a little conviction and then going home. I mean, if that's you, that's great. I mean, fine. Honestly, fine. But I'm getting tired. So when are you going to fight with me? Story's not over. Pharaoh hardens his heart, and it's hard. And the Lord said that Pharaoh was going to harden his heart. So it's funny how this works, right? Pharaoh denies God and denies that he has any real claim in this. And then by denying God and hardening his heart, he fulfills God's word. Like, he's like, no, I hate God. And God's like, see, I'm going to tell you. I knew it. I told you. Right? So he fulfills prophecy without meaning to. Just like the Roman guards. But they don't mean to fulfill prophecy. They just want Jesus' nice robe. So they cast lots for his garments. And God's like, see? I told you. Right? I mean, they fulfill Scripture without meaning to. And in the same way, this world has no more power than a tree over a mountain. It looks big. It looks real nice. But it can't conquer the mountain. So you've got this mountain, right? And that's God, and this tree is what the world does, and it grows up and it's like, ha ha ha, I'm going to take on God. And the mountain crushes it. Because a tree can't handle a mountain. So God uses Pharaoh to show his name. And then God says, all right, for 7 days they're going to have death. Check it out. Right? Verse 25. Thank you. Verse 25, it says, for 7 days, 7 days passed until, 7 full days passed after the Lord had struck the Nile. So for like 7 days, they're in bloodland. And the land stinks. And there's nasty dead fish everywhere. Now, I just think it's interesting that the Lord took essentially 7 days to create Sabbath. And here he gives them 7 days of their death. There's kind of an interesting parallel there, right? 7 days to peace, and God makes peace. 7 days of death, and there's still death. Right? So, now I want to back up some, and we're going to conclude with this. I want to talk to you about the stick. This is a nice one, right? We use this in the Passion Play for the shepherds. It's got a little crook on it. That's what they're for, right? Sheep. God gave Moses the staff where? Where did he give him the staff? Huh? Say it loud. Who said it? Yeah, in the wilderness, right. He gives Moses the staff in the wilderness, right? And he gives it to him at the burning bush. And he shows him what to do with it, right? And so during Moses' time when he's learning from the shepherd of God, he's got this staff, right? And he's growing with the shepherd of God, and he's got this stick. Now, the staff, for Moses, let me just tell you, the staff becomes really important. It represents all the time that Moses had spent with God. It represents everything he had learned from God, right? And so all the stuff that he had learned to do, he had learned to do with his staff, like, hook a sheep, and things like that. But he had learned a ton about God's way, and God gave him a staff, and the Bible calls it the staff of God. And God gave him this staff that would show him power over death and sin. So it gives him the staff to show power over death and sin. And Moses carries it with him everywhere he goes. Like, he goes to Egypt and he's got it with him. Goes to Pharaoh, got it with him. And really, Aaron's carrying it. But, like I said in the story, you're Aaron. So you got it with you, right? So he's carrying this staff with him. And he throws the staff on the ground. And it becomes a serpent, and he can pick it up because he's got victory over sin. And so he's been redeemed, so he's got victory over sin. And he throws the staff on the ground, or he waves the staff over the Nile. It shows victory over this world, right? Victory over the gods of this world. And light, it shows truth. It shows real. Moses has a staff. And in the Old Testament, the staff represents all that God has taught, all that God has said, represents His word, represents His strength, represents His life, represents your life with God and your walk with God. When God gave him the staff, He gave him three signs, that we've covered and talked about. The blood to water, or the water to blood, rather, and the leopard hand and the snake. Well, it's interesting. When we come to the cross as believers and we stand at the cross, that staff is exchanged for a sword. Right? And all of a sudden, we have something else. We have the sword of the Spirit, right? And we're given a sword to do battle with. And no longer do we stand with a staff, but now we have a sword. And now the battle's not against flesh and blood, right? It's against the Spirit. So we stand with a sword ready to do battle. And that sword for us, by the way, just in case you're not picking up on this, that sword is called the Spirit, right? The sword of the Spirit. And that sword is sharpened by the Word of God. So we carry the Word into battle. Right? We carry the sword with us. And when a soldier carries a sword, actually I can talk to you more about martial artists, so I'll go that route. When a martial artist carries a sword, as he carries it, it's no longer just a piece of metal. Because when you use a sword, the blade thing, like the, Bushido stuff, all that stuff. And I'm not talking out my head. I did study this. Not last week. I've studied it kind of my whole life, martial arts, that is. And so the idea that you have a blade, you learn certain techniques that make you move it faster, that make you move it with more agility, that make it so that you can push, thrust, stab, pull, grab, whatever, with the sword. And no longer does the sword just become your weapon, but your whole body does. Right? A good swordsman, this is only a part of him. It's an extension of his body. So he stands with his sword, and no longer are moves just ha, ha, like when you were little, right? And you played with your sister. Ha, 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 right? Back and forth. Right? No longer are the swords just that. No longer are they simply moving the blade like this. But now, your whole body moves into motion with the sword. So all of a sudden, your defense mechanisms look more like this, and you're moving with more agility. You're coming down over the top, you're coming up, and you're going around like that. And it's all just really simple. But because you've learned to use the sword with your body, it's no longer just a simple sword, right? Instead, it's become part of you, part of a weapon. And a good fighter, their sword becomes a part of them. What I was really good at was a knife, right? And I shared with some of you, one of the moves that really convinced me to quit studying the knife was this one where you trap an arm, and in fact, I'll just show it to you. I can't do it with a sword, it's too long. So, you trap an arm, right? And the arm's here, and they brought it across, and their knife is coming down like this. You trap an arm, and you slide in, and then you come down into the collarbone, right here. And you come down into the collarbone, so their head is here. I'm not going to describe anymore, but you can imagine this. And so, what it looks like, the whole move is, and then, so, I mean, naturally, you've already cut the person in several places where they're going to die, and then you slam that in the back of their head. And that's what convinced me to stop studying the knife, right? But the thing about studying that move is that the knife wasn't the weapon, I was. But because the knife had become an extension of me, I was able to do the motion. So I want to ask you again, when are you going to get into the fight? When is this word going to become your sword and you're going to actually start battling? I mean, when are you going to join in the fray? Because I can't do it for you. I can't fight the enemy of darkness in your school 7 days a week by myself. I can't fight the darkness in your homes by myself. Lord knows I try. But guys, we have an objective. We have something to charge. We have a target to make. So I want to know when you're going to fight. When is this going to be more than just a game you play on Sundays and Wednesdays? When am I going to get some backup? Now, some of you probably feel like I do. You feel like you've been fighting. You feel like you've been fighting and like no one's fighting with you. And I want you to recognize something. Although it feels that way, and although I talk like that, you are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And you fight with hundreds upon hundreds of warriors. So if you feel like me and you're tired, take hope. Because this word promises us that we're not alone. Not only do we have Christ, but we have a great cloud of witnesses that fight with us. So the challenge is get in the fight. And take your sword and go to war with Christ. And fight the enemy. For the next several weeks, we're going to talk about fighting. We're going to talk about killing off Satan and his influence in your school, in your homes, in your life. We're going to talk about exposing the Nile for what it really is, death and despair and destruction. And we're going to take heart because we're going to join the fight. And I just want to give you a heads up. If you don't join the fight, you're not going to like me. You're not going to like being here. Because like so many others have told me, they feel like I yell. Well, we're in a war. Hello. But we're going to war with Satan, and we're not going to lose sight of our objective this time. And if we start getting petty and small again, I've asked God to reprove me. And if I start letting things get petty and small and lose sight of our objective, I've asked Him to discipline me. So we're going to war. And this is a battle. When will you stand and fight?